startup life and entrepreneurial life and business life is just that recommitment, suffering every day. Don't let anyone, like, you got to love the problem you fall in love with. Don't get me wrong. And you have to be, have radical focus about the why you're doing it, and every day coming back to the why me, why now, why this. But there is suffering, and it's recommitting to that suffering every day and saying to the family and friends and your team around you, we said that's where we're headed. That is still the grand ambition. And yeah, we're going to have to do these resets and pivots and these hard moments. But you know what? There's magic making in the hardest moments.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Hey, quick heads up. If you're still in Windows 10, you need to know it's going out of support this October. That means no updates, no patches, just risk. Nostra can help. They're offering free upgrade consultations for businesses right now. Hit the link in the episode description. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me. When it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Anya, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Making me nervous having a pro in. Usually people don't have a clue what's going on. I can just bluff my way through. Whereas I got a pro
I'll
in.
Mark I'm like, you out of 10 at the end.
What do I say? How do I ask questions? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't, but we've got 6 years in.
I much prefer being that side of the microphone asking the questions than this side.
Isn't it mad?
Yeah.
Like, the difference is huge.
It really is, because you get to do the art of powerful questions and just trying to kind of wrap a process around the content. I now have the responsibility to try and say something reasonably intelligent. So pressure's over here.
Deep insights.
We could swap some point if you'd like. But
No, we did that this morning in the Mansion House. And even that I found quite, they sent me the questions. I was like, oh, I don't know what the answer to that is. I've done hundreds of interviews. You do know the answer, Gary. You do it every week. Yeah. But when you're put on the spot, it's hard. But like, you've been doing this for years.
The thinking on your feet part, yes.
Both.
Making it up and, as I go along.
Businesses, broadcasting, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Why did you start a business?
So I've had what I call a squiggly career, a phrase borrowed from amazing authors based out of the UK. But so I've been the teacher, the journalist, the broadcaster, the accidental entrepreneur, the board advisor, the lecturer. I've done a lot of different things. I've worked for the platforms, I've done the startups. And probably here more than ever at age 43, I know what the thread line is now. Like, I knew at age 15, I wanted to be a teacher and I wanted to be a journalist. I was really clear on that. And I knew at 15, and I worried even then as a 15-year-old self that there was this binary choice, because in my secondary school, you had to pick your leaving cert subjects before your junior cert. And we'd no transition year. I remember being that kid at 15 thinking, oh my God, what if I get this decision wrong? And thinking it was this or that. And I was very lucky at 15. I have an uncle in journalism, Frank McNally, the Irishman's diarist in the Irish Times. And he will say it's the only time he's ever given me advice. And it happens to be the only time then I did take his advice. And it's probably the only time in life I had a plan and it worked out. And he said to me at age 15, if you want to do both, go and do teaching first, because you're going to have this holistic degree, psychology, sociology, philosophy. You're going to get out in the world and work with kids, but also work with parents. You're going to have this life experience that will fuel your journalism. And education may be the thing that really is the bedrock of your journalism. Whereas if you do it in reverse and do journalism first, you're not going to have that life experience that's going to give you the credibility to really kind of find your way in journalism and have a specialist subject. And that is what I did. So I went off at age 17, became a teacher, went to St. Pat's out in Drumcondra, and after 2 years took the career break, very short-lived career break, because I did the master's in journalism.
Can you call it a career break after 2 years?
You know, and I remember at that point, my parents always knew I was going to do both. So it wasn't a surprise to them when I'd taken the permanent pensionable job out in Drumcondra. And even those 2 years teaching fifth class girls, I used to go off in the evenings, leave Corpus Christi National School in Drumcondra and go around the corner up to the Northside People newspaper to start putting a portfolio together, and worked for free for a long time. But I loved it. Like, I learned my vocation upstairs in the Omni Centre, where CMAT has just recently done her Euro Country video. And the Omni Centre is where journalism started for me. And so in that instance, from 15 to what, I was 20 when I became a teacher out in the classroom. I was, what, 22, 23, did my master's of journalism. But from that 15 to about 23, 24, I planned to work and I worked to the plan. It's probably the only time.
That's that remarkable discipline for someone in their teens.
Yeah. But I, you know, it just felt right. Okay. I felt right at 15. I was very grateful for that moment of realizing, because I think we often feel like we get these binary choices in life. And realizing at 15, it can be also and. There are moments in your life where you can do this, then that, and it's going to be okay. And my parents, when I would have told them I'm ready to leave teaching, have the portfolio and going for the master's in journalism, and they were incredible, because their attitude was, well, do what makes you happy. And we can sometimes bandy that around and it can feel a little bit like a cliche, but it's so true when you do actually have the privilege of doing the things that make you happy. But no, right, I'll have to know what my plan B and C is here, but I'm going to go for it and let's hope it works out. So, yeah, I often think back to that 15-year-old self and being very grateful for the one true good adult. And that's something I often think about is, you know, we all need these one good adults at different moments in our lives. And I had my Uncle Frankie in that moment, and I've had lots of people throughout my career. And you have to catch it in the moment and have those moments of gratitude to know you got to pay that back now because someone gave you that wise intervention.
Wow. I don't know where we go from here. I think we'll just wrap it there. That's 5 minutes of absolute knowledge bombs there. You're making me rethink my life choices here. I'm going to have a career chat with you afterwards. You said so much there, like the binary choices. I think that's so powerful. Because there's such pressure put on people and we put such pressure on ourselves.
Yeah.
And how can you know? And I think
you can't
know, but I think it's a couple of things there you've said I really want to kind of explore. You know, it's the thing of never be afraid of walking through a door you can walk back through again. Because I feel there's so much pressure put on, especially young people. Know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Whereas I think you had a brilliant bit of advice there, like your Uncle Frankie, that is incredible to go do this, but you can also do that. Like, there's not this kind of like, just be a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, just settle yourself down now, just be a teacher. And you see so many people in life do this kind of repressed ambition thing. They just go and do the thing they think they should do, as opposed to, well, you can do this and that maybe. So your squiggly career, I love this. You've described kind of my LinkedIn there. Someone asked me yesterday in an interview, you know, tell us about your career. I'm like, I think that could take up the next full thing. We wanted to get to the topic.
Yeah.
I've done very similar to you. I've kind of squiggled around in different things. I'd like to, curiosity has kind of driven everything. So from the journalism then, how did you know it was one over the other? Because you sampled both. What then drew you to the one?
Yeah, and I suppose that comes back to the thread line piece that I can only see now in full clarity. Like, I had a mantra along the way of what's the worst that can happen, you know, just go try. And there is an interesting thread line from teacher to journalist, journalist into startup with Storyful, into platforms like Facebook, out again to a startup, doing the boards, trying to give back. And the thread line I know now, and maybe I always knew it though, was that if you are a teacher, you're an educator, you're trying to impart knowledge, you're trying to help young people and children better understand the world around them because you're giving them skills and capabilities and capacities. Well, think about the work of a journalist. Journalists are pretty similar. You're trying to kind of just make sure that there's a town square of facts, that you can impart knowledge, help people make decisions about the world around them day in, day out. So there is this thread line from teacher to journalist. And then you actually start to put the startups in there and the platforms. Well, all the work I've done through the startups and the platforms is pretty similar in terms of, well, what does it look like to play my part if I can help amplify quality news and information and mitigate maybe the stuff that can do real world harm? So the thread line is there. And that's probably been the purpose from, you know, age 17, going to college, having this squiggly career. And then you're kind of getting to this point now in life where you've done the startups and you've done the platforms and you're working with about 5 or 6 different charities. And you're like, well, what's the higher purpose now? And that's my challenge in life, because I'm at a point in my life where with this squiggly career, it's like, well, how do I use my privilege and how do I do something that has true impact and meaning for me, but the way in which I want to see the world progress and change around me?
What is that higher purpose you want?
Increasingly, given work with Gashka, the president of Ireland's Award for Young People, so I chair that. I chair the Shona Project, which is this initiative in schools across Ireland to help young girls with mindset, confidence, resilience. And I chair Rethink Ireland, which is this incredible 109 euro million fund that is funding social enterprises across the country. It's just extraordinary what it does. And then in the background, try to help everyone from Awaken Angels to Tech Founder, Fierce Dan and Dogpatch Labs and beyond. Where I know I spark a lot of joy now is trying to think about that young generation and future generations and how we help spark joy for them, but spark them into entrepreneurial careers and make sure that they're getting on that runway and being set up for success. So increasingly it is around, I'm very fortunate to have found very purposeful work and purpose, but how do I play back that to others? And my daughter's generation, she's 7, and to think about, well, in 20 years time, and I'm having deep philosophical conversations with my daughter, I want to have good questions, or good answers rather, to the question of, well, what did you do in those moments of an information disorder, or a moment where we know our young people are so capable of so much, but you look at levels of poverty in this country, levels of homelessness, mental illnesses, there are so many hurdles in which they have to cross. And I feel very, very motivated to try and play my part for that generation, because there's this poster in Facebook and there's lots of mantras that came out of lots of different companies. But one that in Facebook that always resonated was this idea of nothing is somebody else's problem. That we all have, like, it'd be so easy to get up this morning, listen to the news. You know, you look at Ukraine and Gaza and we look at climate change, we look at homelessness figures, and it's so easy to say, well, it's not my problem, except we all do have a hand and a lever. Like, there's some lever you can pull every day to try and impact some change. And so I constantly keep coming back into my, what can I control? What can I influence? What can I accept? And there are days where you have to accept, feels pretty scary out there right now. It's ambiguous. Change is the only constant, but there are ways and means that I can influence the behaviors, the cultures, the values that I want to see in the world around me.
It all starts with you.
Yeah.
Bring me back to your career, because you've had, I don't even know how we're going to pack all this in, right? How do we go back and look at, say, your journalism career? Because I think a lot of people would know you as a journalist first, but then you had an entrepreneurial moment. Mm-hmm. Was that always the plan? Because you've had a very clear teacher plan, you've had a very clear journalism plan.
No, definitely.
How do you then veer into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, and with journalism, what I always loved, and I have been an education reporter, a news current affairs reporter, political correspondent, and I worked with all of the main national newspapers. And the piece I always loved about journalism, though, was when you got to work on stories like Stardust, the 48 victims going back to 1981. And that's a story I would have written about from the Northside People newspaper right up to getting it onto the front page of the Irish Times. still in the early 2000s. And that's the power of journalism, is with consistency of effort and curiosity and building trust with your sources and just being dogged and determined that you can actually do something that hopefully helps the healing of those families. So there's great power, and I hugely believe in the town square of facts. And more than ever, when we look at the information disorder around us, more than ever, I believe in the need for quality news and information, and let people make up their own minds about it. And so I had done 7 years in what you might call traditional journalism. And I was very fortunate, along with 13 others from the north of Ireland, south of Ireland, to get on kind of this 2-week program. This is probably back in 2009, I want to say 2008, 2009. And it was the then US Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, had this program. 14 journalists, young journalists, brought across to the United States. And we had the opportunity to go into, you know, Boston Globe. Marty Baron was the then editor of, and to get to sit in his company, to go into the New York Times, to go down to NYU and sit in the company of Jay Rosen. And having these moments over 2 weeks of realizing journalism has to change here. The revenue model is not sustainable. And having this moment sitting in Jay Rosen's classroom, and I consider Jay Rosen one of the absolute godfathers of journalism best practice, and him saying, we're doing it in the wrong order. Journalism, traditionally, we've stood up on our high hills and we've preached in the hope everyone's just going to buy the newspaper, turn on the radio, turn on the TV at these designated times of the day and listen to what it is we have to say. But what if you do it in the other order of start with your community, start with truly public service journalism, where your audience have the stories and you're trying to pull from them and curate from them. And coming back after that course, while we were still in New York, myself, Fran McNulty, there was Cullum O'Mongoyne, people who are well known on radio and TV today. We'd been in a diner just off Times Square, and up on the ticker came, the IMF has arrived in Ireland at the end of this 2 weeks. And we went out onto Times Square and we're looking up at the ticker. And at the time, I'd been told by my editor, don't tweet anything that could compromise tomorrow's newspaper. Even though this conversation was breaking news, it was across all platforms, the conversation was live. Like, you think back to that moment in Ireland, and feeling absolute this moment of paralysis, and got to the airport, started writing in an email in draft, landed here and sent the email to somebody I'd never met before, only ever seen him on the TV, and that was Mark Little.
What was the email?
The email basically said, I've heard about Storyful, seen you on the Late Late Show trying to describe it. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
You didn't do a very good job, still, Mark.
But I think you're part of the future solution to the journalism I want to be part of saving and doing something different. And
so you'd picked up all these little kind of nuggets along the way, going, you were seeing the pattern emerging, you were seeing the threads coming, and you're like, oh, this is now starting. I always think of when you're like, you know, you got to get your eyes tested and they're putting in all the different, the blurry, less blurry, less blurry. Oh, it's kind of clear now. So you're having a moment of clarity.
Going, this is coming. Yeah. And Mark is this, anyone who knows Mark Little knows he's this amazing futurist and this lyricist. So like, knowing there was something there, I want to be a part of that, come what may. And meeting Mark, who, you know, he still has the email. I have the email too. And
so you emailed him.
Yeah.
He replied, obviously.
I tell him that he needs to hire me, that he does not have a job for me. But over, you know, several months and several coffees, I think, again, consistency of effort, I left a big role in traditional journalism and politics and media to go down into what was our offices in the IFSC. There was probably only 10 people in Storyful at the time, and go, often you'd go into new jobs and somebody says to you, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Well, in Storyful, we kind of did have to reinvent the wheel. And so began this craziest adventure, particularly with Mark, who I now call, you know, one of my dearest, bestest friends in life. And knowing, even sitting down in that room, like if you think back, you know, 2010, this period in our lives, boom to bust, feels very heavy. And here you are, part of this startup, and you're going to have to pivot quickly and do the resets and change to meet the moment. And we did. But as Mark and others will tell you, with any business venture of that nature, you got to endure a lot of lows and optimize a lot of highs, but hopefully just day by day make magic. And we were very, very lucky with Storyful. Did it again a second time, obviously in Kinsen.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
You're prolific.
The friends and family called the difficult second album, but it came good for us in the end.
It's so rare. Like, it's super rare. Like, I mean, everyone says, oh, you know, back a serial founder, but it's very rare to see a founder like you go twice in quick succession and have almost very similar outcomes.
Yeah.
So before we move off Storyful here, what was the highlight of that?
Do you know, it's just the team. I think, I know I speak for Mark, when you think about, of course you have the relief of an acquisition and the joy and the happiness that comes with that. But when I think of Storyful, I just think of this extraordinary team with so many different backgrounds from journalism, academia, different industries. And we always made a point in Storyful of just hire people who are curious and who are here to learn and can adapt and are, have open mindsets. And we're just this extraordinary team from across the world. And we were really 24/7. Even the day we sold, we were still only a team of 30 people from Sydney to, you know, California. And it was always on as a team. And you think of news events through the years where it's like the Arab Spring back then, you know, the Paris attacks, the Boston bombings, all of these moments where you were just getting, you were taking the call to get on together and try and make sense of these massively breaking news moments, because you felt a real responsibility of these news moments will only be known because of eyewitnesses who've happened to take out their phones in these moments and upload it to a YouTube or a Facebook or a Twitter. And we bear a responsibility now to try and find that content in real time, verify the date, source, location, talk to that eyewitness, get their permissions, tell their story, and bring this content, these stories from the margins to the mainstream and distribute it. And so when I think of the incredible nature and powerhouse that was Storyful, it was all team. And you know this because your podcast is about the people. Like, it's people who build culture and teams and products and tools and services. And like some of those people, you look at where they've gone on today, like Malachy Brown, New York Times, like award-winning Donny O'Sullivan, hired him as an intern into Storyful, Megan Spezia, Claire Wardle, like the Storyful network effect now, where it was truly the special team of its moment that was learning, building technology that was finding this content in real time, but then building this extraordinary skill set on top of your traditional journalism and your natural curiosity, this ability to verify in real time. And they've gone out into the world of newsrooms to preach, to train others. So it's the network effect of a truly brilliant team is what makes me really, really proud today.
I think that's a really interesting point, because we're both going to be judging the image pitch competition. And you kind of look at what, like, what's unique and what makes people stand out. And they asked me, like, why I'm excited to do it. And I was like, because Ireland's ecosystem is at a real tipping point now. Mm-hmm. Like, what you've just outlined beautifully there is we now have people like you, and then people who've been trained up by you who are now in the ecosystem, mm-hmm. who might be going again, who might be building something. So we now have expertise. We've seasoned serial entrepreneurs who've done it, who now go, yeah, this is going to be my third one, but I'm going to change it like this. There's something special happening in Ireland. I think we have an opportunity.
Yeah.
We can go one of two ways here. I think we can keep bringing in foreign direct investment, or we can build like the best place 100%. In the world to start a business. I think we've a real opportunity there to
we
sense
do.
It now.
And I think what, you know, people like you and I who really care about this country and want to see local sustainable jobs that can weather the headwinds, because right now there's a lot of ambiguity of what lies ahead, given potential trade wars and tariffs. So the more that we can do that anchors jobs, innovation here in this country. And to your point, we are so well set up. Like, you look at any league table when it comes to education and literacy, we are top of the leagues. Now, we have a problem though when it comes to happiness and affordability and housing. So we got to fix some of the absolute basic fundamentals to make sure we can keep our brilliant, well-educated.
They're solvable problems.
They
I think
are.
We're at such an advantage. People complain about Ireland all the time. And I was like, I don't think you realize how lucky you are. Mm. I don't think you realize you'll wake up in a stable environment. You wake up to a stable government. There's no war in the country. We have, you know, most people are supported in some way, and you have freedom to choose. Like, yeah, we have so many good things. Layer on the education and the infrastructure.
We just can't be complacent.
We can't. And we, that's what I think is a tipping point.
Yeah.
So talk to me then about the kind of sale of this, right? Because it was really interesting to see this sale. Because I'm like, oh, that's incredible. They started it, they grew it, and they sold it. Because I think that's really important in the ecosystem as well. You need people who start and then sale and then exit. So what did that feel like?
I think in Storyful's case, obviously, there's a pride. I think any founder will tell you there's always just an enormous sense of relief. Because in our case, and I think the nature of any startup life, and startups don't move in straightforward lines. They rarely go according to your plan A. I think it's fair to say with Storyful, we were definitely probably plan C, plan D, because we had a moment of, it was B2C, then became B2B, and we were selling into the world's publishers and broadcasters. And that news wire was so critically important for the mainstream to have this content in real time. But what became revenue generating for us was when I came back 2012 from the US election. So my beat in specialism, I love doing the politics piece in Storyful, and Mark and team realizing we got to find another revenue angle in order to kind of sustain this news piece. And we had this realization that if we could use the same technology that was helping us find the news eyewitnesses in real time, what if we could find the cat videos and the funny videos and just the serendipity, spontaneous nature of the weird world that we all work in? What if we could use the same technology over here to find it before it goes viral?
Okay.
Find it, verify, talk to that person and say, we will do a revenue share with you. We will bring this to all the world's media. And every time that video gets played, you're going to earn money. And that was the unit then that I ended up building inside Storyful with an amazing team around me. And that became extraordinarily successful inside Storyful. Like to this day, we still hear the stories from parents who come back to say, I've put my kid through college because of that video. Thank you. And all you were doing was helping them through the Wild West. Because if you think back to this at the time, you could upload a video and suddenly there'd be 1,000 copies of it on lots of different platforms and you'd no way of pulling it back in. So we built this very ethical, transparent licensing model that became very, very successful, that set us up then that we had this viral wire with this news wire. So the time of acquisition and News Corporation coming along, obviously there's a pride factor. You've just weathered recessionary times, you've weathered the pivots, and there's relief because you've done it. Now, Mark will often say that the day we sold was the day Storyful was profit making. And there, I think for Mark, there'll always be a little bit of a question of what if, but when I put myself back into that room down, not far from here near Merrion Square and going through all of the options and running the scenarios, like right then it felt like the right thing to do. And it remains when you see Storyful still out in the world doing what it does, working with the world's biggest, bestest newsrooms in this moment where more than ever, you need to be able to trust what you see, but you equally have Storyful continuing to debunk what is BS and what is false. It plays such an extraordinarily powerful and important role. So, yeah, relief, happiness, no regrets.
The day you sold, it was relief.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think even second time around, that's the, an exhaustion. Like, you know, there's so many times I think back to Storyful and the team will laugh if they listen to this now. Like, we had hard times where you'd literally be looking at the light bulbs going, you know, do we have enough in the kitty to replace those? And we'd won Christmas party 1 year and didn't have enough to bring everyone out. And I felt so strongly about it. I took my Christmas tree in from Drumcondra in the boot of my car and we ordered takeaway and we just brought in whatever bottles of booze we had from home and played games. And it was the most memorable Christmas party. And I had to pack up my Christmas tree at the end of the Christmas party.
I love you brought the tree in as well. Like, the effort.
Christmas tree was not in the budget. And like, you think about Storyful, because like, I think sometimes we do ourselves and audiences and people listening to a podcast like this, we do a disservice if we only ever talk about, well, we started here and we sold and it was great.
And it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And because people come on and go, oh, well, we did this. And then we sold. I'm like, okay, so I need you to take me back to like 3 months in, 4 months. Because these are the stories. Because people will look at you, successful entrepreneur, successful broadcaster, and they'll see the end results. Mm-hmm. And we make this horrible thing of comparing ourselves to that.
Yeah.
You compare your day one to your day 1,000, and it's just not fair. And it puts, again, the binary pressure of like, oh, how do I be like, oh, yeah, it's not fair. She, you know, she's done this, this, and this. But the reality is that. The reality is the grim
messy
times.
And like, I have this song, Carry On by The Fun.
No, I know.
And we went through a period where we were trying to close this deal. And I thought I was going to close next week. And I was like, we get that check. We're kind of home and hosed here for a few months. And of course, the check didn't come. And I decided I'm not drinking. Not a sip of alcohol. Not that I was a big drinker, but I had this thing, not having a drink.
It's a very Irish thing, to be fair on you.
And of course, the deal didn't close for like 3 months. And we went out for 3 months and I was the person going, nope, I wasn't going to take a drink.
For you.
We got this closed. And so I have this song from that 3 month period, Carry On by The Fun. And that idea of, you know, Scott Belsky talks about it in The Messy Middle of those moments of you just have to endure those lows, optimize the highs. But day by day, you still have to go in, turn the lights on, go to work, work to plan, plan to work, do the deliverables, keep the lights on, business as usual, while all the time looking around corners, trying to make sure, are we doing all the things within our powers and capabilities to get that? And so there's messy, horrible moments, and it's the things outside your control, like somebody promising you that check and it doesn't come for 3 months. And so you're iterating and you're pivoting. And Mark's off doing speeches to keep, you know, revenues coming in and all of that. And that's the magic making though, because it's in those moments, that's where you build human connection. Those are the moments with your team. And don't forget, your team are building the product and the company and the culture. And those are the moments you build trust. You're literally telling people in Storyful and Kinson how much is in the bank. So there has to be this radical transparency. But it does create this sense of togetherness. So when I think back to that Christmas tree, in some ways, as funny as it is now, but back then it was like, oh my God, we got to give this team a Christmas party. Like, who can go through the Christmas season? And I can laugh about it now, but in those moments, you're just like pushing the boulder up the hill, just trying to grind it out every day. And so it is startup life and entrepreneurial life and business life is just that recommitment, suffering every day. Don't let anyone, like, you got to love the problem you fall in love with. Don't get me wrong. And you have to have radical focus about the why you're doing it. And every day coming back to the why me, why now, why this. But there is suffering and it's recommitting to that suffering every day and saying to the family and friends and your team around you, we said that's where we're headed. That is still the grand ambition. And yeah, we're going to have to do these resets and pivots and these hard moments. But you know what? There's magic making in the hardest moments. Like, I know I'm a better person today because of those moments of resilience rather than the moments where you got to announce an acquisition.
Doesn't feel good at the time.
No.
But, you know, it does change. If you learn the lessons, it does change you as a person.
Yeah.
Why on earth would you start a second startup? I know the ending to this story, but if people are listening going, oh, thank God she got out of it. It sounded so miserable.
Yeah.
Why on earth?
I know.
Sorry, before we go there, what did you do when you sold?
So we sold.
Because I feel there's more. I feel there's more squiggles coming.
Yeah, squiggles coming. So after a period, maybe a year after the acquisition, Mark left. He went on to Twitter. I stayed 2 years. And I can honestly say in my 5 years in Storyful, I genuinely never looked at another job, never applied for anything. And one job came up at the end of the 5 years. And I thought, okay, if ever I was really, truly to push myself beyond the comfort zone, this is it. And it was a job, global Facebook job based out of New York. And I had this thing, even though I've been traveling the world for Storyful, I had this thing about I would love to go and live abroad and bring something back. And maybe there's a little bit of the Irish chip on the shoulder where sometimes you feel like you have to leave in order to come back. But I also felt it was this role as global head of journalism partnerships. So this is what, beginning of 2015, I get this role. Because my genuine belief was, well, what if Facebook There's all of this incredible content. You can help journalists find it, as we've been doing in Storyful. You can teach them how to verify it, turn it into stories, monetize it, find new audiences. This is a really important solution to the future of journalism. And so left Storyful, Mark had gone at this point, moved to New York to head up global journalism partnerships to build the tools, products, services that would help journalists do their job on Facebook, through Facebook, and find new audiences. And I did that until for about 20 months, so nearly 2 years. But I'd always, Mark and I had always said to each other, if and when we have the itch and something worth solving, we'd go again. And my role, as you can imagine, by November 2016, part of it had already been about, well, how do you detect, disrupt what was then called false news on the Facebook platform? So a huge amount of my job became about that whole world and trying to build the Facebook Journalism Project, the News Integrity Initiative, coalitions with First Draft, and trying to kind of think about news and information on this very, very long spectrum from, right, you have to think about the responsibilities around algorithms, but you need to think about news literacy even in your schools, journalism partnerships. How do you support local newsrooms in the United States? Like, news deserts is a very, very real thing in the United States back in 2016 and now, where you just have huge towns and cities without operating newsrooms now because they haven't been able to keep pace with the transformation where everyone is a publisher, so many platforms now, and democracy dies in the darkness of those towns and cities where there's no accountability and you don't have the town square effect. So back then, Facebook was trying to think about, well, what responsibility do we bear here to try and be part of the solution? So that was my life for nearly 2 years. Learned a huge amount, but in the learning, realized there was this question that Mark and I had started to talk about of what would it be like if you could start again when it comes to news consumption and this information disorder. And what if you had the luxury of coming back to Dublin, literally to a whiteboard to try and figure it out? And that's what we did.
What was living in New York like before we come back? Because I love New York. I have this fantasy about moving to New York to write a book or something. It's just, there's something about that city. What was it like to live there?
Fabulous. Like, you do have this idea, I'm going to, you know, I have this mindfulness and I'm going to do yoga and I'm going to have this huge network. And of course, you get to New York City and you just become part of the whole system there, which is work hard. And got to go to Columbia University, lived up beside Columbia University. So I had this incredible opportunity to study for a year in Columbia University, did the Sulzberger Fellowship Program that probably fundamentally in ways changed how I think about work in terms of change management. So they taught me so much about, you know, your DVPs. And if you're going to affect change, well, you need dissatisfaction multiplied by vision, multiplied by process. And I think I'm probably someone who's naturally good at process and I can buy into a vision, but I'm probably impatient that I don't spend enough time on your D, which is your dissatisfaction. But if you get really good at the dissatisfaction piece, you know, what makes your competitors, your clients, your customers, your fellow citizens dissatisfied, you will spot the times for pivoting and failing inexpensively and moving along. So it was this massive learning moment, a real awareness around cultural differences between how Americans work versus Europeans. Whereas here, back in Europe, back in Ireland, I think you have much more sense of a collective energy and much more purposeful. In the United States, I used to often feel like it's very individualistic, and I used to find that part of
dog eat dog. It's true, like it's you're out for yourself.
I found parts of that hard, and in my case, I was while I had two homes. Really, I was renting in New York City, paying a mortgage here, tax resident in New York City, but still knew I always wanted to be back here. I had a gym membership in New York and a gym membership in Dublin. So I was never settled either.
You still had a foot here. Okay. You still
home was
had a
always
foot.
Going to be, okay, how do I come back and do something in a country that I love? And maybe do something, yes, of global import, but something that would truly feel like, right, in this moment. Again, we're going back to 2017 here of, this is an information crisis and I could stay in Facebook and be very successful. And I loved my job for all the complexities and trickiness of it. I can either stay and fight the good fight inside Facebook on behalf of the world of journalism and publishing, or I can go back and fail at something, but at least it's mine. And I'll own with Mark the ethics, the values, the principles, and fail we might, but I'm going to do it. And the thing that probably held me really accountable, and Mark wouldn't have known this at the time, in summer 2017, I was very early pregnant with my daughter. And I had this thing about, I want to have a good answer to her question in years to come, of in this moment of this disinformation, misinformation disorder. What did you do? You know, did you stay in the thing inside your comfort zone? Not that working in Facebook is inside your comfort zone. Or did you put your hand up, come back to Ireland and try and do something
really
different?
Yeah. That was driving
you? Yeah, I was really, because I felt really strong. So I had this thing when I became pregnant with Anna of happy mommy, happy baby. And as hard as it was going to be to go back to Ireland and start a startup while quietly being pregnant, that I wanted to role model the right things for her and to have the courage of your convictions. And I, back in that summer of making my mind up to leave Facebook to come back and start again here in Ireland and start something with Mark, I went down to the Fearless Girl, you know, that little statue down in Wall Street at the Raging Bull. And I made a promise there that I may fail at this, but I'm going to do something and do something that I love and answer a calling here, because I think there's work to be done. So yeah, I spent 3 months starting the startup with Mark before I plucked up the courage to tell him that I was probably 4 months pregnant. It was probably very obvious, but yeah.
So much to unpack there. Wow. I feel it's a movie in this. I love that you went on the statue, though. It's such an iconic statue.
Yeah. Come back a few times.
So when, and you need those moments, right? You need to anchor yourself in those moments to feel it, because making these decisions is difficult and it's hard. And you have to have moments where you just go, right, this is important. And even symbols and things like that are important.
Yeah, and in those moments, like, I've gone back to that Fearless Girl. I can't begin to tell you many times, because I've been lucky to go back and forth to New York a lot. And you know when you can hold two different things to be true at the same time, where you're like, I'm fearless, I'm going to go do it. But I am very worried about how I'm going to pay my mortgage in a couple of months' time and how I'll explain this to my family if this doesn't work. And you can hold those things to be true, can't you, at the same time of feeling really courageous and really scared. And I think that's the important thing as well. You know, for anyone already out on their entrepreneurial journey or itching to get in there, is that these two things have to sit side by side all the time, but you have to push yourself outside that comfort zone, knowing the risks, knowing the mitigations, and being honest all the time of, well, what would I do if I weren't afraid? And if you're okay with that answer, go forth. If you're not, you got to dial it back a little bit and go, well, okay, what is a little bit easier and palatable to actually go do without putting the house at risk?
I like this duality, though, like, and it really is, you know, two things can be true simultaneously. Yeah. We live in a world of binary. I don't need to tell you this. Yeah. This is your whole life's mission, is to have transparency and truth. But we live in such a binary world. You're either for it or against it. Yeah. It's this or it's that. It's yes or it's no. And you're like, I think the answer is in the gray in the middle. Yeah. But you can't get your head around that, because it's not a simple solution, or it's not a bad guy, good guy, good person, bad person situation.
But you have to live in the gray zone. Like,
if you be comfortable with it. I think you expressed it beautifully there, though, more eloquently than I can put it, in terms of there is that middle, and you have to have the light and the dark with you at all times, and you have to be able to go put them together and go, okay.
And I used to, and it's different shades of gray, but I used to make this point to my team all the time, particularly in Kinzen, of, this is rarely ever going to feel black or white. We live deep in the gray, and there'll be different shades of it on a different week. And like, I think I used to drive Mark mad with this, but there was good continuity and consistency. On Monday mornings, we used to open a spreadsheet, which was like our plan A revenues, and then there was plan B, C, D. And you were kind of looking at different scenarios. That check comes in here, that investor comes here, that one matches. And you're playing out these scenarios. And sometimes you were having to map out right down to plan F. and be okay with, right, if that's the one we trigger here, that's still okay because it's still the stubbornness about the mission and vision. And it is that piece of, I don't think anyone's necessarily comfortable in ambiguity, but you have to just get really good at wrangling it and being really comfortable with the very, very hard questions. So like, this is where the beauty of having a co-founder, Mark and I could often have that honest conversation on a given Monday in Kinsen of, how hard is this going to be for you with the mortgage, with your responsibilities to your family, if this plan doesn't work out this month, and having to be honest with each other of how far we could push. And that's the beauty of not being a solo founder, is that there's always somebody else. On your hardest days, there's somebody else picking you up, showing you the way. And you intermix, like the beauty of co-founders on those Monday mornings, you're playing to each other's strengths and weaknesses. Mm.
I need to get onto a quick fire round, but just one last kind of wrap it up there with Kinsen. What was the outcome then with Kinsen? I can't leave people on the, what happened? Ask the question. So, what happened with Kinsen?
Yeah, so Kinsen came back, let's say September 2017, and Kinsen got acquired almost 3 years ago by Spotify. We built technology to detect, disrupt misinformation, disinformation, real world harm. We were working with lots of different platforms. Again, we had built the most extraordinary team of technologists, designers, machine learning engineers, but also just brilliant journalistically trained people on the ground. And that is the beauty of still technology today, that idea of human in the loop. You know, build all the best models and think about automation and AI, you're still going to need really clever, expert humans who understand language and nuance and context, who are pumping the models and also having the oversight on the other side. And so, yeah, acquisition almost 3 years ago. And the proudest moment in those moments is, again, knowing Mark and I might have sparked something and trusted each other to know the moments we had to pivot. And we had lots of resets and pivots. So Kinsen, again, is not this, we started here and we had this beautiful trajectory. Wasn't. But the joy is knowing you built this team of people smarter than you. And when you can lead without ego, know that they're going to answer the hardest questions on the hardest days, and that what you might have started with Mark, they're going to finish. And they're going to go and do what Storyful did. And I know the Kinsen folks are going to go out into some of the biggest and smallest organizations and start their own startups now. And second time around, the so-called difficult second album came good. But the joy that it gives me is now seeing that team go out into the world, go into Spotify and do extraordinary things.
The ripple effect. We're going to have to get you back for part two. Sure. We've barely scratched the surface here. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. Quick fire round.
Okay.
Right. Literally just need one sentence for these.
Right.
What book has had the most impact on you?
Playing Big by Tara Moore, particularly for women. Help you wrestle with your inner critic, but trust your inner mentor.
Playing Big?
Yeah, Playing Big. And it's Moore, M-O-H-R, by Tara Moore. Brilliant.
What's your superpower?
My superpower, I think, is the art of powerful questions. And if you can ask questions and lead without ego, you don't mind sometimes asking the obvious questions and trusting that other people have the expertise and the answers, and you can convert that into something meaningful. And yeah, my superpower is knowing I'm not the smartest person in the room and being okay with that, and just being the Microsoft CEO put it once of, don't be the know-it-all, be the learn-it-all. And I'd like to think I'm that. Lead with curiosity, lead by listening, trust the team that you've hired.
What daily habit is the secret to your success?
Several coffees, too much coffee, training every day. But I will say my most important daily routine is the time with my daughter, because you got to remind yourself what you do it for. And the change you're trying to impact in your society, community, a country you love, what's it all for? Well, it comes back to a little seven-year-old that you're ultimately accountable to at night. So, yeah.
I agree with that. I'm going to give you €1 million to invest in one person or one company. Who?
I don't know whether it's who, but it's more the idea of social enterprise and purpose-driven enterprises. I'll give you an example. There is an incredible lady called Eileen McHugh at Ballymun who is building Hair Together. And the concept is that she's bringing young people in from lots of backgrounds, training them up as hairdressers, but also teaching them skills for life. So emotional regulation, how to communicate. And it's probably going to be the world's first trading for impact salon and academy. And she has an extraordinary background. She's very public about her own drug addiction and how she transformed her life. And the work she has put about 260 kids out in Ballymun through this program. Mm. She is extraordinary. And so if I had $1 million like that, I'd be giving it to the Eileen McHughes of the world, the bounce backs of the world. You know, this incredible man from the traveling community down west. I think at last count, he had hired 30 people from the traveling community, and the enterprise is all around recycling mattresses. And so not only is he giving back to his own community with sustainable local jobs, but it's environmentally sustainable, it's futuristic. That's another business worth backing. So it's more this idea of social enterprises, those who are actually doing real good in the world around them. But it's very hard sometimes for them to actually get the fundraising. Mm-hmm. Don't think Rethink Ireland, which I chair, is all about trying to do this. And it's a unique model between philanthropists, corporations, government funding from dormant accounts, and trying to kind of match all of that to go and back those social innovators. It's amazing.
What do you believe that other people find weird or disagree with you on?
I think a lot of people doubt that I sleep, but I will say I get a healthy quota every night and I take my weekends off. So that's probably on a personal level what people probably struggle. I answer a lot of callings and I know sometimes people will look and say, does that not leave me time poor? But I think I've always done that and I do feel this responsibility. Use your privilege, use your platform to do some good. Because I think most entrepreneurs who sit here in front of you will tell you it's not about the money. Like it is about answering the calling, doing some good, changing something. And it is about legacy. And I do feel a responsibility now of personal legacy to my family, my friends, my community, to strangers that I'll never meet and use that for good while still getting some sleep. I promise my friends and family I do sleep.
What's been your best investment?
Best investment, apart from investing in people, which we've talked about a lot, I have kept a career coach going since the News Corp acquisition. That was one of the first things they invested in a coach. And ever since then, I have paid for it myself. So I set aside a percentage of my salary every month. Because I know I need accountability, but I also need somebody who's not there to be a yes person to ask back of me the powerful questions and hold me accountable to them. So, and I would say that to anyone who can afford to do it, even if you only go once a quarter, have a career coach there so that you're holding yourself accountable to the milestones, to your own whys, to you lobbing the ball, having a stubbornness about that's where I'm headed and just having somebody to help you navigate it.
So, I mean, you're going to be judging the image pitch competition mm-hmm. coming up very soon. What's the best bit of advice you'd give to someone who's going to apply?
Oh, I think if you are really clear on why you, like back to Simon Sinek, right? The why me, why this, why now? If not me, then who? If not this, then what? And if not now, then when? And if you have an absolute radical clarity and focus on your why, you'll get the judges in the Q&As and the investors on the how and the tactics and how would you do this and how you'd sell in what market. But if you have just a real purity on that why, through the why will come your passion and purpose. That will come across. Like people will back you. Judges, investors and the likes will back you sometimes on sheer passion and conviction if you have that real clarity of purpose, even if you're going to do the half a dozen resets and pivots and all that comes with it. So I think that's it. It's sit down and look at that and think about, is this a problem worth solving? Not just for you, but if you were to go out and test it with people on the street, your friends and family, and demonstrate that there is a commitment by you to seeing it through, but also being open-minded enough to know the pivots that are going to be needed and take advice. Be willing to listen, because you will have your blind spots, but it's start with why and the rest will come.
Brilliant. If people want to apply, I'm going to put a link in the description below. Anya, that was an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.